House, please come to order. Will members please indicate your presence by voting? House is in order. House is in order. Members indicate your presence by voting. Madam Clerk.
14 members present.
House will stand at ease awaiting the arrival of a quorum. House, come back to order. Members indicate your presence by voting, please. Madam Clerk.
22 members present.
We do have a quorum to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, may the General reflect that Representative Elkins was previously excused from the call of the House today. And Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Wyrock be excused from the call of the House today due to some illness.
Those members then will be shown as excused. Leading the invocation today is again Pastor Patrick Brayton of the Valley Chapel. Members, please rise for the invocation.
Please bow with me in prayer. Father in heaven, we come to you with grateful hearts, acknowledging your loving favor in the past and petitioning you for its long continuation. As your word declares, with God all things are possible, but without you, we can do nothing. We trust in your mercy and forgiveness for the sins of our past, and we beseech you that your wisdom and blessing will be poured out on us today. May those who serve us here in the House of Representatives experience your love and walk in your truth. May their families also experience your love and protection. And may all of us who call Alaska home benefit from the work done in these chambers. God bless Alaska and keep her in your path. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Representative Hawker, you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask that beautiful, thoughtful prayer be spread across the journal.
Hearing no objection, that beautiful and thoughtful prayer will be spread across the journal. Madam Clerk, do you certify the journal for the previous legislative days?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 85th and 86th legislative days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal of the previous days be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
Again, hearing no objection, then the journal will be certified as presented by the Chief Clerk. Do we have any guests for introduction this morning? Representative Samuels.
Thank you very much. I've got a very special guest that I'm poaching from District 32. This lovely young lady here to my left is a guest page. She is a student at Golden View Middle School, Jill Lynn Stam, and more importantly than that, she is my sister's youngest, and that makes her my niece. So please welcome her to gym.
Were you up late last night trying to figure that out? Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to poach as well this morning on the member from District 8. With us in the Paratrovich Gallery, we have Mr. Steve Lundgren, who's a member of the Air Force Association, and also is down here with the employer's ESGR, anyway. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Please give him a warm welcome.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce in the Paratrovich Gallery a friend and a constituent of mine, Mike Matowski. Mike is here with the employer support of the Guard and the Reserve, ESGR. He is the state chairman. ESGR is a Department of Defense volunteer organization which provides free education, consultation, and if necessary, mediation for employers of Guard and Reserve employees. ESGR's goal is to support America's employers who share their employees with the nation to ensure our national security. Please help me in giving a warm welcome to Mike Matowski.
Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Warren A. Taylor Gallery, we're privileged to have a number of multi-generational Alaskans Two of them are down here with an initiative to promote agriculture through the food service distributors and the visitor and hotel industry. The proprietor of Butte Farms, Golden Valley Farm, and Palmer Produce, he's been involved in just about every state board involved with agriculture, and I wish the member from Juneau, the one that's not a man, was here, because he's known her since she was a young person. I'd like to introduce Paul Hubert first. I guess you knew who he was. And at another spectrum of the multi-generational, this guy's at the other end, Roger Vanderwill, a local Palmer kid, Vanderwill Farms. If you're buying Alaska potatoes, which I assume you all do, they're the ones with the windmill on the bag. And he's probably one of the most seen farms you'll see on the way to the Alaska State Fair, Roger Vanderwill. And then from District 13's district, a third-generation Alaskan who's a pretty hard worker, and I'm glad he's decided to hang around this session and actually do some good work, Ken Mulligan.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Pratrovich Gallery is Phil Whitaker. He's no relation to our mayor, but he's here first time in Juneau. He's here for the Folk Festival and lives right in my neighborhood, and he's an organic farmer. So my friend Phil Whitaker.
Other guests, Representative Kelly.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce Cheryl Kilgore, if Cheryl will stand. And Cheryl's with the Interior Health Center in Fairbanks, and there are a lot of folks that wouldn't get good health care if it weren't for this lady and the work that she does. So welcome, Cheryl. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to introduce the Christopher West. If he'd stand, please. And Christopher is the, there he is over here. He's the general manager of that rockin' spot at the foot of College Hill, the Marlin, and welcome, Chris and Jim. And Mr. Speaker, if I could get the following, Maya Salganik and Jody Bailey is here, and Lori Hurdies, and they're part of the Cookie Brigade, and the university, all the university folks and University Staff Alliance folks, and down to see how it works here in Juneau, so welcome to our university team.
Other guests, Representative Curtula.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Right in front of the Pratrovich Gallery, sitting where the press is a young woman named Audrey Siegel Kohler. She's visiting from Camino Island, Washington. Her father lives here in Juneau, and she's producing a video on the workings of the state legislature for her fourth grade class in Washington State. They're going to be visiting the state capitol in Olympia this spring, but because their session is already going to be over, she's going to be filming us today. So if you'll help me welcome a budding photojournalist, Audrey Siegel Kohler.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. I have one other guest in the Taylor Gallery from the UAA Staff Alliance. Also is Bob Kaiser from District 29. Welcome him, please.
President Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery, also from the UA Staff Alliance, is Lisa Sporletter, who also has graced the presence of many Fairbanks audiences with her cabaret singing. So please join me in welcoming her.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Elizabeth Pratrovich Gallery, constituent of mine down here advocating for the University of Alaska system. She's a 15-year employee of the University of Alaska, president of the UAA Classified Employee Council, president of the UAA Assembly. I've gotten to know her on these trips, a great person, Kim Stanford in the Pratrovich Gallery.
Zane Guttenberg again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When I miss them, I'm sorry. Steve Johnson is here, if you would stand. Over there. He's behind the column. Thank you. He's a sales manager at specializing in Carhartts at Big Ray's in Fairbanks, and he's here to enjoy the music festival. So I want to thank everybody that comes down. It's always good to see friends coming up for the music festival from home. Please join me in welcoming.
Majority Leader?
Yep. Sir, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, also, I think in the Pratrovich Gallery,
Somebody works at the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital and is down here for the first time to enjoy the music festival is Jennifer Luchansky.
Any other guests? Ms. Rammers?
I have one other guest. Hiding back in the corner is my friend Chief Isaac Junby, and with him is Donna Westphal. I had a chance to get to know Isaac Junby last year. He's a good man. And hi, Isaac, over in the Taylor Gallery.
Any other guests? Are there messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor today, Mr.
Speaker. Are there any messages from the other body?
There are no messages from the other body.
Other communications.
Received letters of disclosure, and they'll be published in a House Journal Supplement and a Senate and House Joint Journal Supplement. Received from the Department of Revenue Treasury Division the annual report on the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. There are no further communications.
Are there reports to standing committees?
The Finance Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 57, sale of state land to adjacent landowners, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 57, Finance, with a new title, or same title, attaches a previous indeterminate fiscal note recommending do pass Harker, Holm, Curtula, Jewell, Moses, Wyrock, Foster, Meyer, and Chenault. No recommendation, Kelly and Stoltz. The report was signed by Representatives Meyer and Chenault, co-chair, sponsor substitute for House Bill 57 has no further referral. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 390, Property Assessment Appeal Fee, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 390, CNRA, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Thomas, do not pass Sisna and Olson, no recommendation, Ledoux, Salmon, and Cott. The report was signed by Representatives Thomas and Olson, co-chairs. House Bill 390 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 419, repeal underground storage tank laws, attaches a previous zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Hawker, Wyrock, Holm, Kelly, Moses, Foster, and Meyer. The report was signed by Representative Meyer, co-chair. House Bill 419 has no further referral. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 496, Contributions from Permanent Fund Dividends, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 496, State Affairs, with a new title, attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Gardner, Ramirez, Grunberg, and Seaton. No recommendation, Lynn, amend Gatto. The report was signed by Representative Seaton, Chair. House Bill 496 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, Criminal Sentencing, and Polygraphs, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, with the new title pending a title change resolution, attaches a zero fiscal note and a fiscal note, a previous zero fiscal note, and six indeterminate fiscal notes and a fiscal note, recommending do pass Holm, Hawker, Kelly, Foster, Meyer, and Chenault. No recommendation, Wyrock, Jewell, and Moses, amend Curtula. The report was signed by Representatives Meyer and Chenault, co-chairs. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, is on today's calendar. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 298, Judiciary, Trust, Challenges, Claims, Liabilities, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 298, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, attaches a previous zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Lynn, Cott, Ledoux, Rokeberg, and Anderson. No recommendation, Crawford and Guttenberg. The report was signed by Representative Anderson, Chair, Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 298, Judiciary, as a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. There are no further standing committee reports.
Are there special
Speaker.
Committee reports?
The Conference Committee considering committee substitute for House Bill 149, Finance, amended, and Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 149, Finance, amended, Senate Court Ruffield, Senate Controlled Substances, request limited powers of free conference on specific points that will be spread in the journal. The report was signed by Representatives Coghill, co-chair, and representatives Stoltz and Crawford, Senator Seekins, co-chair, and senators Bundy and French.
In accordance with Rule 42A of the Uniform Rules, I give limited powers of free conference on House Bill 149 to those items that were in your written request.
The Conference Committee considering committee substitute for Senate Bill 232, Finance, and House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 232, Finance, amended House, supplemental appropriations, respectfully request limited powers of free conference on specific points that will be listed in the journal. The reports were signed by Representative Chenault, Vice Chair Representatives Meyer and Jewell, Senator Wilkin, Chair, and Senators Green and Hoffman.
Also, in accordance with Rule 42A of the Legislature's Uniform Rules, give limited powers of free conference on Senate Bill 232 on those items indicated in the written request.
There are no further reports of special committees today.
Are there any resolutions or citations to be introduced?
Citation honoring Alaska Army National Guard, District 5 of Southeast Alaska by Representative Thomas and Senator Kukesh. In memoriam Robert Gable by Representative Coring. In memoriam Stuart Hall by Representative Guerra and Senator Ellis. In memoriam Ramona Pugh by Representative Stoltz and Senator Huggins. In memoriam Margaret Dorothy DeRoe by Senator Stevens and Representative Ledoux. House Concurrent Resolution 40 by the House Finance Committee suspending Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill 218, Sex Offenses and Child Kidnapping Crimes and Sentencing.
That'll be on today's calendar.
There are no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Are there any bills for introduction this morning?
House Bill 499 by the House Labor and Commerce Committee by request entitled an act relating to the delegation of duties by a dentist.
Refer to the Labor and Commerce and the HESCA, please.
There are no further bills for introduction.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Bill 334 by Representatives Ramos and Foster entitled an act relating to an exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes for certain types of deteriorated property. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered the bill, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending Dupas, Cisna, and Thomas. No recommendation, Newman, Cott, Salmon, Ledoux, and Olson. The report was signed by Representatives Olson and Thomas, co-chairs. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 334, Finance, with the same title, attaches a previous zero note and a new zero note, recommending Dupas, Wyrock, and Foster. No recommendation, Stoltz, Hawker, Jewell, Kurtula, and Holm. The report was signed by Representative Stoltz, Vice Chair. There's one committee substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 334 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Objection. We have the finance version in front of us. Madam Clerk, do you have any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
With that, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Bill, the committee substitute for House Bill 334, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Brief it is. House, come back to order. Third reading, Madam Clerk, would you please read the title for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 334, Finance, entitled an act relating to an exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes for certain types of deteriorated property.
Representative Ramos.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise before you as a humbler man than I was before the at ease. but still with the merits of a good bill that I would like to bring before the body for its consideration. House Bill 334 deals with the disposition of property taxes on run-down buildings. I know in the community of Anchorage, the McKay Building has been an eyesore for decades and been in a state of rehabilitation for a few years. In the community of Fairbanks, we have a beautiful building back around statehood called the Polaris Building that has fallen into disrepair over the last 10 or 15 years. It's a concrete structure. The windows are broken out. The plumbing has failed. It's non-compliant with codes in 100 different ways. And the city of Fairbanks has declined to tear it down because of the cost associated with its demolition and hauling it off to the landfill. So as a result, we're interested in enticing a developer that would show some interest in trying to rehab that building. But the problem is that it has been accruing property taxes for some years. And should its rehabilitation take some time, it would also accrue property taxes during that period of rehabilitation. So House Bill 334 tries to address this issue by allowing a potential developer and a municipality to arrive at a property tax deferral for property taxes in arrears and those that may accumulate while the building is going through revitalization. And it's a little bit vague, the language and statute in House Bill 334 clarifies that language. And I think it's started out as a unique need that we looked at for this tremendous eyesore in Fairbanks, but we have heard from people around the state for whom this bill is applicable for other buildings that have fallen into disrepair, and with that I recommend approval by the House. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate? Representative Crop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I've known the prior speaker for a while now, and I don't know what happened at the At Ease, but whatever has that effect, whatever will make him humbler, I'm in support of. And I want to thank whoever did that. I'm also in support of the bill, and want to thank him for bringing it up. I've been involved with some of those issues around bills crafted to allow municipalities to have the discretion to do just this, to use their taxing power to encourage redevelopment. I think they've worked well, and this incremental improvement is another improvement on that process, so I'm in support of it.
Another debate. Representative Roper.
Mr. Speaker, I have in hand a letter from the municipality of Anchorage for which this original issue was first developed, echoing support and concurring in the bill, and I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that. This is a positive incremental change, and I agree with the last speaker.
Representative Coring.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to be excused from voting on the legislation before us due to the bill potentially affecting a company I am in contract with.
There's an objection, Representative Coring. You will be required to vote. Other debate? Ready for the question. Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 334? Pass the House. Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, would you please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
38 yeas, 0 nays.
So with a vote of 38 yeas and 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 334. Finance has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader. Oh, Madam Clerk, I'm sorry. Would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
House Bill 439 by Representative Coghill, entitled An Act Relating to Authorizing the State to Join with Other States Entering into the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact and Authorizing the Compact to Supersede Existing Statutes by Approving Standards, Rules, or Other Action under the Terms of the Compact. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 439, Labor and Commerce, with a new title attached to zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Lynn, Roekberg, and Kott. No recommendation, Crawford, Ledoux, and Guttenberg. The report was signed by Representative Kott, Vice Chair. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 439, Labor and Commerce, with a new title attaches a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Coghill, Anderson, Kott, and McGuire. Amend Guerra and Gruenberg. The report was signed by Representative McGuire, Chair. There's one committee substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for House Bill 439 with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Labor and Commerce version before us. Madam Clerk.
There's an amendment being duplicated.
It is. House, come back to order. House, come back to order. Representative Ledoux. Madam Clerk, do you have any amendments?
Amendment number one by Representative Guerra, beginning page one, line four.
Representative Guerra.
I move amendment number one, Mr. Speaker.
There is an objection. Representative Guerra, you want to explain the amendment, please?
Thank you. I'm going to have to do the sort of tricky dance we often do, which is talk about the amendment without talking about the bill that the amendment changes. So which I can't do. So
I'll give you a little bit of a leave.
I won't talk about oil taxes. Mr. Speaker, the bill that I'm not allowed to talk about says the state can join with other states for purposes of coming up with rules regulating disability policies, life insurance policies, things like that. And then the state becomes bound by those multi-state rules. And I have all the confidence in the world in the current director of the Division of Insurance, and she said, as in practice, these things have not diminished the protections that consumers receive in insurance policies. The problem in the future, the state could sign on to a new rule governing disability policies that jeopardizes somebody's disability coverage, lowers their level of disability benefit coverage, and then we'd be bound by it. So what the amendment simply does is it says and just one more thing, the bill lets the insurance division director opt out of any of these compacts that the division director doesn't like. So the compact lets you do that. What this amendment says is that the director shall opt out of any standards, disability insurance standards, other standards that reduce the protections our policyholders and consumers receive. And the compact lets you opt out, so we say under those circumstances you should opt out. And then it says if the director violates that duty, the court should limit their any sanction of the director to say try and correct it, but the only way for you to correct it is to jeopardize our membership in this compact, we're not going to make you do that. So the court can say to the extent you can correct your failure to opt out in a way that doesn't jeopardize your membership in this compact, do so. If you can't, well, I guess that's up for us in the legislature to try and figure out later on. So the amendment is basically a consumer protection amendment that tries to respect our membership in the compact as well.
Is the objection maintained? President Coghill?
I'm going to remove my objection. I just wanted to speak to the discussion that I've had along the way. I agree with the consumer protection. I was just I was questioning how to get the courts involved, and I've been satisfied with the language here that that is an avenue that is fairly narrow, and it's fairly well defined in the compact of the opt-out provisions anyway. And I think all this does is give somebody a right to challenge the director, but it only goes to either the conditions of the compact or to the legislature to remove itself from the compact. So I'm going to remove my objection, Mr. Speaker. I'll support the amendment.
Representative Wilson?
I'm going to object.
All right, Representative Wilson, you're objecting. You want to speak here?
Well, I just have a question that I want answered first. What happens if, in the process of all of this, because of escalating costs that are happening all around us, that they have to reduce the services because the costs are rising? If something like that, that's under nobody else's control, and we're saying that the director has to, that they don't have an option here, that they have to, it says shall opt out. I just have a question, what happens then? Because there may be circumstances beyond anybody's control that would make that happen. So I just want to know the answer to that.
Mr. Speaker, I can answer that. First of all, there's a couple remedies. We can opt out of the compact altogether, or we can change our state laws to be materially different than the compact. It's just that we would eventually start veering away from the compact. So nothing in this compact is going to keep us from making specific state law.
Other debate? Is the objection maintained? Briefities. Morning, Maxie.
I remove my objection.
Okay, I like that. Without objection, Amendment Number 1 has passed the House. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Garrett.
I have been...
Are you objecting to your own amendment?
I am objecting to my own amendment, Mr. Speaker, as embarrassing as that sounds.
That'll make the skits next year. That'll be good, yeah.
But only temporarily. Mr. Speaker, one of the members had a good, friendly amendment to the amendment that I promised I would offer, so I would like to move amendment to the Amendment Number 1, which would be... On line 11, page 1, after the word applicants, put in the words, under Alaska law. What that does is it clarifies that we want to maintain the rights and protections that we grant to our consumers under Alaska law. And the director should not agree to a compact that materially reduces those rights.
Do I hear any objection to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing no objection, amendment to the amendment has passed. That brings back in front of us Amendment Number 1 as amended. Is there any objection to Amendment Number 1 as amended? Seeing none, Amendment Number 1 as amended has passed the House. Brings us back to other amendments, Madam Clerk.
I have no further amendments.
Okay, Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, thank you. I appreciate the dialogue that we've already had. Mr.
Why don't
Speaker,
you move it to third, please?
Oh, that's right. We're not in. We have a ways to go yet, don't we? We'll see how this goes. Mr. Speaker, with that, I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 439, Labor and Commerce, amended on the floor, be advanced to third, engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There are no objection. We're in third. Madam Clerk, would you please read the title for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 439, Labor and Commerce, amended, entitled An Act Relating to Authorizing the State to Join with Other States in Entering into the Interstate Insurance Product Regulation Compact.
Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Now you can have at it.
All the wind has been taken out of my sails. Mr. Speaker, several times we enter into compacts with other states to do things, and that's exactly what we're trying to do here. This compact is not in force yet. There has to be 26 states, and I think we're 21, 20, somewhere in that neighborhood. So it's got some ways to go. This would join us together in a compact to deal with insurance products. And those products would be life insurance, annuities, disabilities, long-term care products. The reason for the compact is severalfold. You know, people move in and out of states, and life insurance, disability insurance, is something that can be more portable than, say, auto insurance within a state. So trying to get standards for life insurance so that that various different states don't have different types of requirements. So this is an attempt to put together a compact that gives each state standing and would be able to design products that would be then more uniform throughout the variety of states that are on the compact. So that part, it's a marketplace change. I suppose the other thing is the states can agree to do it together, or there's probably going to be a push from federal government for kind of a uniform type of product agreement that might be mandated from the feds. So I think that's kind of out there as the possibility. Mr. Speaker, I've mentioned the products, the number of states that are going to be involved in. This compact actually raises the standard. So the way the amendment hit the bill, we actually will be increasing some of our consumer protection issues, and I'll just name them as easily as I can understand them. By the way, I'm doing this by request, so... But I've actually fought some compacts because I am one that doesn't like surrendering state sovereignty that much. But this gives us a right to compact together for specific issues. Under this compact, arbitration provisions for post-dispute binding arbitration would be available. That's not right now available in state law. The free look-back, where if you buy a product, you can get 10 days of free look-back under this compact. For some of the products, that's not how we do it in Alaska right now. So it actually increases consumer protection there. Readability standards are probably a little clearer than what we have here. I don't think we have express readability standards to some of the notes I have here. And so there are a variety of different issues that this compact will take care of. The opt-out provisions that we just talked about in amending are significant. The each commissioner or director, as we have in Alaska, will be a member of the compact and will know when there's a discussion coming up about standards that may vary from our own states. So the 10-day may seem like a short window, and it is, in fact, a short window once you make a move. But the reality is we'll be involved in a discussion all along the way. So there won't be surprises unless people are just asleep at the switch. So the amendment to the bill may very well keep that accountability at a high level. So I'd be glad to try to answer any questions along the go, and I would encourage people to support this. I think it's a good way to go.
Is there any other debate? Ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 439, Labor and Commerce, amended on the floor, pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
37 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, with a vote of 37 yeas and 0 nays, committee substitute for House Bill 439 has passed the House. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 218, financed by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Sex Offenders and Child Kidnappers, relating to reporting of sex offenders and child kidnappers, relating to periodic polygraph examinations for sex offenders released on probation or parole, relating to sexual abuse of a minor, relating to the definitions of aggravated sex offense and child kidnapping, relating to penalties for failure to report child abuse or neglect, relating to sentencing for sex offenders and habitual criminals, and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, with the new title, attached a zero and a fiscal note, and the previous zero and five indeterminate and one fiscal note, recommending do pass Holm, Hawker, Kelly, Foster, Meyer, and Chenault. No recommendation, Wyrock, Jewell, and Moses. Amend Curtula. The report was signed by Representatives Meyer and Chenault, co-chairs. There's one House Committee Substitute.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, with a new title, be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, we have the Finance version before us. Madam Clerk, do you have any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
See no objection. We're in third. Madam Clerk, please read the title for the third and final time.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 218, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to Sex Offenders and Child Kidnappers, relating to periodic polygraph examinations for sex offenders released on probation or parole, relating to sexual abuse of a minor, relating to the definitions of aggravated sex offense and child kidnapping, relating to penalties for failure to report child abuse or neglect, relating to sentencing for sex offenders and habitual criminals, and providing for an effective date.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair, and members of this body for hearing this piece of legislation. I'd also like to thank the grandmother who first brought this to my attention earlier this summer. She came to me and expressed some of her concerns about this, and the more I learned about it, the more concerned I got, of course. But I was very troubled by the crimes that were involved with this. This legislation has received bipartisan and unicameral support. Both sides of the aisle. I particularly would like to thank some of the members from the other side in Senate District J and P, but also Senate Bill 218 sends a message to those contemplating or involved in this act that Alaska is going to be tough on these types of crimes, and it brings Alaska in line with the national effort to fight sexual abuse and violence against children. It also ensures longer sentences. Sexual offenders will have less access to children, effectively decreasing sexual assault numbers, and it also increases the compliance with probation requirements through mandatory polygraph testing. And with that, I'm just going to close for now, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for members of this body.
Other debate? Ready for the question? Question is, shall House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 218 Finance pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
35 yeas, 0 nays.
And so with a vote of 35 yeas and 0 nays, House Committee Substitute, 4th Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 218 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on a passage of Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 218 Finance be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call vote on the bill will be the roll call vote on the effective date clause. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Committee substitute for House Bill 409, Labor and Commerce, entitled An Act Relating to Excluding Qualified Real Estate Licensees from Workers' Compensation Coverage. Bill's in third reading.
Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I need to disclose that I am, in fact, a licensed real estate broker in the state of Alaska, currently acting in the capacity of associate broker with Vista Referral Service in Anchorage. And so before I discuss this bill, I request to be, I need to declare a conflict of interest and request to be excused from the vote. Thank you for objecting.
I was beginning to say you might have to leave the room or something, but no. Representative Lynn, you will be required to vote and carry the bill, so go right ahead.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, 99.999% of all real estate licensees are in fact, independent contractors. And, in fact, real estate licensees even sign an independent contractor contract with their broker. Real estate licensees receive a salary. We do not receive a salary, do not receive a wage, only get commissions. They pay their own Social Security taxes and even pay the Social Security tax that the employer would normally pay if they were, in fact, an employee. Licensees set their own hours of work and are, in effect, an independent contractor, a business within another independent business. Real estate licensees value their independence and they enjoy the freedom to pursue their business as they see fit. The only responsibility that a real estate licensee has to their broker is to, I guess, to project a positive image for the business, to follow real estate law, and to follow all other law. Real estate licensees do their own retirement planning, responsible for securing any benefits, health benefits they need for themselves and their families. And even the IRS considers real estate licensees as independent contractors, and as we know, if you can't trust the IRS, whom can you trust, right? As independent contractor, it makes no sense whatsoever for workers' compensation coverage to be required, and the purpose of this bill is to fix that. I'm sure that some may want to ask, well, what about other independent contractors? And that's a good question, but that's not the subject of this particular bill. It might be something you want to look at in the future, but this bill... on real estate licensees and independent contractors, and I do believe it's a good and timely bill. As we all know, workers' compensation issues has been a very hotly debated topic, both in this body and in the other body, for some time. And the common denominator of all these debates that we've gone through here has been how to lower workers' compensation costs. And I think this bill takes a good and logical step in that good direction. Quite simply, this bill brings into reality the current productive relationship between real estate licensees and their brokers. I think this bill benefits both the real estate industry as a whole, it benefits individual licensees, and it's supported by the administration, the industry, and likewise, your support of this bill is respectfully requested.
Other debate? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really hate to debate this thing, especially with my colleague here that we've stood together on workers' comp issues before, but this I have serious qualms about this bill, and for a number of reasons. One thing, it's going to remove quite a few people from the ranks of those insured under workers' comp, and it will reduce the pool of people that are insured under workers' comp, therefore making it more expensive for those other people that are left in the workers' comp pool. And there's a couple of reasons for having workers' comp. One is to protect workers that have been injured. The other is to protect the business that employs them. And I understand that there's a difference of opinion as to whether these people are workers, employees, or if they're self-employed. I know, talking to my real estate agent, she thinks she works for a particular real estate brokerage. She doesn't have control over her whole workday. She has control over some of her workday. She is required to show up at certain times and man the phones. She's required to do open houses from time to time. She does have a lot of flexibility in her job because of the nature of the work, but she's not a completely in control of her workday. Right now, under workers' comp, there's an exclusive remedy. If you're hurt at the work site or on the job, you can't sue your employer for negligence for negligence because of the exclusive remedy of workers' comp. We're going to be removing this exclusive remedy, so then that person, whether he's an employee or an independent contractor, he'll now be able to sue that brokerage for negligence, or even his coworkers for negligence. I think that's a bad precedent set as well. There are going to be some people that are going to be left out after this bill passes that are going to think that they are covered, even though they know now that they're an independent contractor. They're going to think that they'll be covered under workers' comp because it'll be a workplace injury, and they're going to be left out in the cold. So I think somehow we need to make it very explicit in this bill to everybody that's going to be now put out of the workers' comp pool that they are responsible for their own workers' comp coverage. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I must mirror some of the concerns of the previous speaker. In the early 1980s, to right at the crash of the real estate market in the later part of the 1980s, I had a contract with the Anchorage Board of Realtors and published their Realtor News, and worked on a very regular basis with a lot of the very same people, or not the same people probably, but certainly the same class of realtor as this bill would address. Those people obviously had a true tie to the broker that they worked under. They saw the advantages of the freedom that they got. But there was a true tie. Here we are, many years later. We're in a point in our economy where things are pretty good. But I saw both the economy going up and what happened to those folks during an up period, and then saw the slide of the economy down and the position that they were put in. We're in a very different place now in terms of health care and the costs of health care and what happens to people when accidents happen to them. And I fear very much that year by year in this body we know and we see the costs increasing, the problems increasing, and we still have not addressed the high costs of health care and what it does to people when they lose a chance to get better with help. And this bill creates another group of people that slide into that category. And I think this causes a real problem.
Mr. Minardi.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of questions for the carrier of the bill. First one is, what are the number of comp claims that came from this pool last year and the previous couple of years? And are there any indication of the number of tort claims that would be caused once these people are removed from the workers' comp pool.
Representative Lynn?
I don't have that figure at hand.
Other debate? Brief it is.
Now let's come back to order.
Other debate, Representative Roquebert.
Mr. Speaker, I'm a licensed real estate broker in the state of Alaska, and because of that, I may have a potential conflict of interest here, and therefore I'd like to be excused from voting on this issue. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That said...
There is an objection, Representative Roquebert. You're required to continue to vote.
As a employing broker, because of a bureaucratic judgment, I'm required, if I have employees, which I don't now, having been kind of busy down here in Juneau, I would be required to, under current statute, not statute, but under current interpretation of the bureaucracy, require to buy workers' compensation for any independent contractor as a licensee that would be associated with my business. And that's what this bill is all about. Because this has been a judgment call made in direct conflict with the U.S. tax code for some over 25 years under very clear statements after lobbying for a number of years to get the clarity, and the publishing of safe harbor rules, which I want to compliment the sponsor for publishing within the bill package. It's the most comprehensive list of safe harbor rules that we have I've ever seen compiled in one thing, and I want to thank them for that. Meeting these safe harbor rules allows, in combination with a contract signed by that licensee with the employing broker, which indicates that these people are independent contractors. They own their own business. I operated as an associate broker for over 23 years under the same type of working relationships. And my broker had to purchase workers' compensation for me. And that was unfair because because of the commission splits came right out of my pocket. And I think it gets curiouser and curiouser when two members on this floor stand up and start redefining rules that have been in place for decades. It gets very interesting. And the fact of the matter is, as one member brings up, if this allows me to reduce my expenses, not having to buy workers' comp, I might be able to buy health insurance, which all these people have if they're doing the right prudent thing. These are any kind of risk that happens are insurable risks. If you're an independent business person, you have a duty and obligation to yourself and anybody that works with you to have proper insurance coverage. For example, there's some issue about some cap on certain amount of damages that could be received and limiting it to $100,000 under general liability. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm just here to stand with the minimal business interest that I have right now. I have a $2 million umbrella policy that covers general liability. And if business operators in the state aren't properly insured, that's a bad business decision. It's not the purview of this body to start mandating what those limits should be. We have minimum limits, yes. That is an appropriate public policy call. But we shouldn't intrude on business practices. And this particular bill is to exempt this long interpretation that's been going on for decades here, requiring to some fiction that these people that are independent contractors and business owners are employees. And that's been thoroughly rejected, very clearly. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, there has been some claims that this is a problem with a group of insurance brokers in the state that have opposed this bill, in spite of the fact that it's been supported by the Department of Labor, the real estate industry, and people associated with this issue. And they've opposed it, quite frankly, because they believe it'll create a additional causes of action under general liability theory. Well, the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that a common law right to bring an action in tort should never be abrogated by this body. If somebody's injured and has been a victim of negligence, we shouldn't restrict that right, or we should restrict it with a minimum amount of sideboards. And we have done that in many instances. I'd be the first to admit that. But in this case, if there's a default to an injury that occurred. For example, I've been in situations as a property manager where such things as slip and fall cases, which are very common in commercial properties, the question is, if it's a client that comes into your office, he clearly wouldn't be under workers' comp, but is it your associated independent contractor that slips and falls? Well, in that case, there's a general liability insurance policy to cover that damage and health insurance, not a workers' comp claim. And that's what this is all about. So, Mr. Speaker, I would ask support of this bill, and let's right a wrong that has been perpetrated on these people for a number of years.
Other debate. Representative Crawford, any other debate? You ready for the question?
The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 409 pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
29 yeas, 6 nays.
So, with a vote of 29 yeas and 6 nays, may substitute for House Bill 409 has passed the House. Madam Clerk, please read the next item on today's agenda. Representative Seaton, brief at ease. Before we do that, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I've got a very dear friend of mine, originally from Nome. He's my predecessor here in the House of Representatives. He served here back in 1987, 1988, currently the head of the Kinnick Arm Authority. Dear, dear friend of mine, and he knows this building very well, and I just wanted to, if you could help me welcome him back here to Juneau, Henry Springer in the gallery behind me.
Representative Springer, as a former member of this body, it gives me great pleasure to allow you the privilege of the floor.
Well, thank you. I don't have anything to say. Everything I have to say, I said 20 years ago.
Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I'll run introductions very briefly in the Warren A. Taylor Gallery, one of my constituents, but first and foremost, a friend from the Springer Loop area, Pat Scheifer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Springer may not have anything to say about what he said on the House floor, but I do. I served with him. And I'll never forget something he said, because he used to announce, traditionally, how the Iditarod race was going and who was in charge. And as the race was pulling into Nome, he said, but it hadn't been decided, and as I recall, it was a really close race that year. Correct me if I'm wrong here. And he said, I know who's going to be the first to cross the finish line. It'll be a dog.
There. Okay, let's move back down the calendar.
Please, Mr. Speaker?
Yeah.
I have a member that has a speaking engagement, so I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Ledoux be excused from the call of the House from 11:45 to 1:15.
Without objection, that member will be shown as excused. We'll stand at ease. Back to order. Huh? Are you ready to go back to work?
No.
Oh, that is. With all the conversation out there, you'd think we were talking about a bridge or something. Madam Clerk, do you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Committee substitute for House Bill 471, Finance amended, entitled An Act Amending the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority Act and the powers of the authority to finance construction and maintenance of the Kinnick Arm Bridge, to set and collect tolls and to carry out its duties, and making conforming changes to statutes relating to issuance, renewal, or reinstatement of driver's licenses, and providing for an effective date. The bill's in third reading.
Excuse me, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move that we go back to second for purpose of an amendment, specific amendment, that amendment being new amendment number 3.
We're back without objection. We're back in second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment, that being new amendment number 3. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move new amendment number 3.
Objection. There is an objection. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would like to clarify that on line 2 of the amendment, that should read, and making conforming changes to statutory, oh, should have my glasses on,
excuse me,
and making conforming changes to statutes relating to issuance, renewal, or reinstatement of driver's licenses. And
that's not what the amendment says that I have.
You have new amendment number 3?
Yeah, but it doesn't say that. Huh? Doesn't he have to have that in there to statutes relating? Oh, okay. Yeah, but it's not on the amendment. Okay. Brief at ease.
I'd like to move an amendment to the amendment. And that amendment would be to strike the first and then add the words after changes to statutes relating.
Okay. So it would read, instead of and, it would read making conforming changes to statutes relating to issuance, renewal, and reinstatement of driver's licenses and?
No, that's correct.
Okay, is there any objection to that amendment, to the amendment? Hearing none, the amendment to the amendment has passed. Brings us back to new amendment number 3 as amended. Is there a debate on new amendment number 3 as amended? Is there any objection to new amendment number 3 as amended? Hearing none, new amendment number 3 as amended has passed the House. Brings us back to third reading. Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the patience of the body through the couple of amendments fixing this bill, and I appreciate the cooperation of the members always working toward a better product. First and foremost, this isn't about the money for the bridges right now. And that's that will certainly be later in the process, as we know. This is some very technical and substantial changes. When the authority passed, was adopted by the previous legislature, there was a commitment to come back to get authorization for the bonding and the technical features. It's the staff of the Kinnickarm Bridge Authority has done some innovative work adapting to the changing environment of funding possibilities and have come up with some very innovative funding proposals which this bill will allow, and so should this project proceed, those will be in place. And but that's the next. This is, and it really provides some opportunities setting up these private public partnerships and for funding, and takes money out of the private sector with as established and through assurances by the our legal staff, the Attorney General's office, and Kinnickarm staff, that this is a large component of the funding. The vast majority to pass through this legislation would be by private sector investment. Sets a ceiling of $500 million for this mechanism. There's certainly a lot of people on this floor that know more about bonding and mechanisms than I do, and certainly happy to answer questions or with brief at ease is the gentleman back behind me who knows more than a few things about building bridges and the mechanisms. With that, I will yield to questions and other comments.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm still deciding how I'm going to vote on this bill, but it causes me a major concern, not the fact that the bridge may be built, but how the bridge may be built. This bill, if it passes, I'm not sure whether or not it'll make it more likely or less likely that the bridge will be built. It's, I think, a little bit questionable whether Wall Street will end up backing bonds to be funded by tolls. There's a major question how many people will really use this bridge in the first 5-10 years when it won't cut down the commute time to the biggest communities in the valley, like Wasilla. But I'd like to express a concern. The current and preferred route by the government officials who are pushing this bridge, is to go through Anchorage's oldest neighborhood. It's a neighborhood I represent. It's a neighborhood our junior senator in Washington, D.C. used to represent. And it's been no surprise that she and I have both been vocal not about whether the bridge should be built, but whether it should be built through Anchorage's oldest neighborhood. And that seems to be the way things are going. There are reasonable alternative routes for this bridge, the approach to the bridge, through Elmendorf, in a way that wouldn't damage Anchorage's oldest neighborhoods, wouldn't damage residences. and the government authorities have been very resistant to use that route. And that is, if I may read very briefly from a letter from our junior senator, Mr. Speaker. It has deeply disturbed her, are her words. It has deeply disturbed me. It also deeply disturbed me, and there's an article from the Daily News that made clear that nobody ever really even seriously considered the military routes as they were scoping this project out. Even though there are reasonable alternative routes through Elmendorf, an article in the Daily News this June made clear that nobody even approached the military about how they would feel about a route that went across Elmendorf. And when they were asked, finally this summer, they said they wouldn't mind it at all, Mr. Speaker. And that alternative was never reasonably and rationally considered, and that is what has disturbed both myself, the residents in that neighborhood, and our junior senator. So, Mr. Speaker, there's a difference between a bridge that just spans Knick Arm and a bridge that requires that we damage our Anchorage's oldest community. I have a problem with that aspect of this whole thing. In the end, all this bill does is grant bonding authority to an agency that already exists. So I'm not so sure whether I object to that or not. It seems like a rational thing, of course, to give an agency like that bonding authority. But by granting them bonding authority, we might be voting to damage Anchorage's oldest neighborhood. And now that I said that, I think it's pretty clear that I'm a no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one of the required readings in public administration is The Power Broker, and it's by Robert Carroll, and it's about the granddaddy of the authorities, which is Robert Moses, New York, and turn of the century, the beginnings of all of this. And what he set up was a port authority that really was the template that really created a lot of the fixes that we now have in our books that actually give some protection, some transparency to authorities. And so any problems I might have about this bill were solved when I actually looking at background on another bill wanted to check and see what protections there were. And there's board requirements and notices and that kind of thing. So I don't worry about that. But what I do have some concern about is the fact that, like then, authorities are a kind of quasi-public beginning of what can be a good thing for the public, but it's really a semi-private fix, too. You can bring private monies in. And therein lies the problem with this particular one. This one, the Knick Arm crossing, started, I thought, for all of us, with the real belief that this was going to be a congressional funding, that was where the money was going to come from, that it wouldn't conflict with uses in our area and monies that were maybe state monies or local monies for transportation, that it was going to be money outside of that. This bill starts moving it to a different place than that. This bill doesn't have, it has a zero fiscal note, but it nonetheless begins opening up the possibility for our public money being spent on something that will be a wonderful opportunity for the private sector. It possibly will have advantages for the public, but that's never been debated. We've never had that kind of discussion. And in my part of town, where we are really the center of so much traffic going from one place to another, transportation is a huge issue. And how money is spent is a really important thing to be debated. I think we need to have some really, I think maybe we need another kind of authority. I'm not against authorities. I think we do need to have some really bold, aggressive, creative solutions to transportation issues. But this bill moves this alternative ahead of other ones, and we still haven't had the public debate. I haven't decided how I'm going to vote on this bill. And I hope there's more discussion right here on the floor right now. And I would love to have it addressed. If somebody can correct me on whether the public's really been involved in this debate, I'd love to hear about it. Thank you.
Another debate, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to support this bill. I think that far from being a bridge to nowhere, the Kinnickahn Bridge is an idea that's been around for many, many years, and I think it's really critical to the future of South Central Alaska. There are still lots of questions, without a doubt. The engineering studies aren't done. There may be some room for flexibility in the route. The funding is a big question. And another one on my mind is whether or not or at what level the railroad should be involved with it. Nevertheless, I think it's very important for us to send a clear message that as Anchorage legislators and as Alaskans, we support the bridge to keep it alive and allow them to move forward and try to get it built eventually. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Crawford.
Speaker, I have to agree with the last speaker. I think that if we don't send a clear message that there's a possibility that this project could once again slip away from us. I've been here for 31 years. When I got here, it was already an old idea at the time. I think that we need to build the bridge, and we need to support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of this bill. A couple of the comments to address earlier, some bold, creative investments in Alaska's future. And that's exactly what I see the Kinnickahn Bridge is looking 20, 30, 40 years down the road, the development that will happen on there and the economic impact to our state, how we can move forward on this. And also, you know, we can fix potholes forever, but what investment do we owe to our future of Alaska? I think this is a big investment. Also, there is ongoing conversations with the railroad involved in this, and I think they're going to continue. I'm very excited about that issue. But I think this is one of the most important projects, road projects, that this state has seen since the Parks Highway was put forward. It's a new road project, and I really feel that we need to move forward on that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Good debate. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I too rise in support of the bill. I mean, it's important to realize what we're talking about is the bonding authority for this authority we've already set up, the permission to bond. One of the nice things about framing it in that way is it has an inherent check on it. That is, as opposed to a direct appropriation or some other mechanism, we're saying go out and put together a package, and then you'll have to bring it to a bonding entity, and they will have, so not a political decision here, but a sort of economic decision, bonding companies with their own money, checking to see whether they think this pencils out, they think it can be built, they think that the tolls can pay for it. That gives me some assurance. And so sort of on a logical or financial level, that's my reason for voting for it. It's also a sort of more visceral or emotional level to this. I hated the Bridges to Nowhere campaign nationally because I hated any place in Alaska being called nowhere. You know, I resisted and something about that whole campaign irritated the heck out of me. I've only lived really in Alaska, born here, and then the San Francisco Bay Area. Before they built those bridges, they were nowhere. Oakland was nowhere before the bridge came. There's no there, was the quote, old quote. And I don't like any portion of Alaska being referred to that way. It's a dismissive deal. I don't know whether this bridge is going to, in the end, pencil out. I don't know what the engineering is going to determine. But I want this to move that next step forward. I want to know, set up mechanisms so we can determine whether it makes sense. I hope it does, because I've been hearing about this bridge sort of all my life, and I think that area, if we could do it feasibly, rationally, on good sound economics and good sound engineering, then no one would be more excited than me if we could open up that area. So I want to see the next step done, particularly a step that has an inherent check on it for whether they're going to loan us the money on the bonding authority. So I speak in support of the bill.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to support this bill. The member who sits behind me from District 23 and I have the honor of representing Government Hill. We share a boundary there, and we are frequently at many of the same meetings and have the opportunity to work with the great folks there. It is the oldest neighborhood in Anchorage, and there are many historic sites there, and the folks that live there love their community and are always trying to improve it. I support this bill because as we have discussed this at community meetings, as we've discussed it in, you know, Kavada meetings and in the different meetings that we've had here, we know that there are checks and balances in place. This is the next step. And I am confident that working with potentially the military, that working with the checks and balances that are in place, that we can further
the road system so that we can accommodate the growth, the tremendous growth that is taking place not only in the valley, but changes in growth that will happen in Anchorage when different land is freed up there. And so I support this. I'm looking forward to the opportunities that it will bring for employment in our area. And again, there has not been a determined site of where this bridge will connect, start, or end, whichever word you choose to use, in the Government Hill area. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Roper.
Mr. Speaker, I lived in Anchorage longer than I can remember, almost 60 years, Mr. Speaker. In my earliest memory, this bridge has been under discussion. In fact, I even recall one funding mechanism, which was an approach suggested by Baron de Rothschild, that the bridge could be a causeway, and it go from one side of the Kinnick Arm to the other, and have a tidal power generating ability to help fund itself. But over the years and over the decades, there's been a lot of visionary thoughts, and this has been in the apple of the Anchorage area's eye for a number of years. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, 30 years ago, when I entered the real estate brokerage area, I wrote an article that was published in Alaska Business Monthly indicating there was a land shortage in the Anchorage Bowl area. And certainly, my predictions are obvious to a casual observer now. I would like to say that this bill is not about the Government Hill. It's not about the route. It's about the funding mechanism we heard. But I would suggest to the folks at Government Hill in this planning process, I hope it takes a look at the template that was put forward by the Fairview Bypass Road Project that has come up with, I think, excellent public input, providing for a major road undertaking in the Anchorage area, connecting the southern portions of our state with the northern portions and bypassing much of the neighborhoods of Anchorage in an undergrade tunnel type effect. And I think the same thing may work well for the Government Hill area. They should take a hard look at that. I am a little bit put on my curiouser and curiouser again about the comments from the member from District 23 about the reactions or the lack of review of the military routes. I understood that the military had responded in the negative to any suggestion that they be routed in that direction, plus the costs are escalated substantially, so I'm a little mystified by that. But, Mr. Speaker, I would like to say that I think there's always been an assumption that there would be local contribution and toll receipts going towards the building of this project. And I do agree again, twice in a row, with the members from Spinard, yes. That one thing that I find very troubling is that I think this sends a very strong message to the Congress and the people of the United States that this is not a bridge to nowhere, and we're willing as Alaskans to stand up and help finance these projects. That's a very important point. Let's support this bill.
Other debate? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to address some points, I ask permission to speak a second time so I may help demystify the rule speaker. Two points. The rule speaker said he was mystified about the comment that the military route wasn't seriously considered, and it wasn't. But if he has any doubt, may I please read just a couple sentences from the Daily News from
very briefly.
June. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Talking about the military route, paper goes on to say, none had been seriously considered early in this round of bridge brainstorming because the authority and its consultants thought the Air Force and Army would resist efforts to build the bridge road across the military bases. That turned out not to be quite true, Mr. Speaker. So they never went to the military to discuss a route because they thought that the military would object, and as it turned out, the military really didn't mind. It seems like somebody should have asked the question before June of 2005, before they came up with all of the routes that went through Government Hill. As to the issue about how much extra it would cost that the Rules Chairman raised, I think he is under the impression that it would cost a ton more money to build the access route through the military base. But according to our junior senator, Mr. Speaker, no work has been done to date to explore whether that cost could be reduced by a slightly different routing, Mr. Speaker. And that's the whole problem. So the comment that this is just bonding, it has nothing to do with the route. Well, Mr. Speaker, the route has been chosen. It's going through Government Hill. So if we vote to allow the bonding, which will promote a bridge, that bridge is going to go through Government Hill. It does have something to do with the route, Mr. Speaker. But I just wanted to correct the misimpressions that the last speaker had.
You ready for the question? Representative Stoltz?
Mr. Speaker, I'll very, very briefly wrap it up. I have a lot of sentiment for Government Hill as well. I was born in Anchorage along with my good friend from Southside. We were born at Benihana's, geographically. My mother lived on Government Hill as a young child, and my older siblings were in Curling, so that's an area I've gone to a lot. One of the very expensive alternatives they're looking at is the under-tunneling that the rules chairman referred to. The military options, any of you know Chairman George Wirch and his contacts with the military, I can tell you as a member, the non-voting member of the board, those have been ongoing contacts. Those are the alternatives have about as many zeros on them as this whole bonding ceiling that we have for that on one of the proposals. It hasn't been unexplored, but again, there's a lot of options on the table. There's been a lot of public process. I've lost count of how many meetings and open houses I've gone to. It's dozens of them around all of South Central Alaska. There's been a lot of public input. We see a lot of presence from some of the affected neighborhoods very consistently at meetings. It's been a process that's been a big expense of the process is the public participation in meeting governmental requirements, which is very appropriate because this is a public endeavor. So, with that, I want to... lastly, I think this project is strengthened by the curves and the challenges thrown at it because when you get a tougher problem, you think a little bit smarter and outside the box. And even the critics nationally and locally have helped make this a better project and got us to where we're at today with this innovative measure. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 471 finance amended on the floor of the House pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
28 yeas, 7 nays.
So the vote of 28 yeas and 7 nays, Committee Substitute for House Bill 471 Finance has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on the passage of Committee Substitute for House Bill 471 Finance amended be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Objection. The roll call vote on the bill will be the roll call vote on the effective date clause. Madam Clerks, please read the next item of today's agenda. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I had another member asked to be excused for a speaking engagement. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Meyer be excused from call of the House from 12:15 until 1:15.
Who wants to listen to him? No. Objection, and that member was shown as excused as well. Madam Clerk, to please read the next item of today's agenda.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 40, suspending Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E, Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill 218, Sex Offenses and Child Kidnapping Crimes and Sentencing.
Title change resolution. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 40 pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
34 yeas, 0 nays.
So, the vote of 34 yeas, 0 nays, House Concurrent Resolution 40 has passed the House. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Serve notice of reconsideration on HB 471.
Reconsideration has been given on House Bill 471. Madam Clerk, please read the next item on today's agenda. The Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us down to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader?
Unanimous consent. In the limbo file, that we may consider the committee substitute for House Bill 92, Judiciary.
Limbo file for House Bill 92, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, the member from District 7 can speak to the changes, and then I'll make the motion.
Member from District 7.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill, House Bill 92, passed the House, went over to the Senate, and it became apparent that a change that was made from the original bill in the House, allowing only nonprofit corporations rather than than profit-making as well would significantly cut down on the effectiveness of exporting intellectual properties and applied science out to the communities. And the Bayh-Dole Act at the federal level, which permits universities that participate in federal funding to form or become part of corporations to export their intellectual capital, most of them are able to engage in both the profit and the nonprofit. So we, on the Senate side, they inserted back into the bill the original ability for the university to participate in both nonprofit and profit making. Mr. Speaker, I would encourage the body to concur with that insertion over on the Senate side.
Any other debate? Majority Leader?
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, I move that the House concur with the Senate amendments to Committee Substitute for House Bill 92 Judiciary, thus adopting the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 92 Judiciary, amended Senate, and recommend that the members vote yes.
You ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the Senate changes, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 92 Judiciary? Members, please vote. Mr. Majority Leader? Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
33 yeas, 0 nays.
And so with a vote of 33 yeas and 0 nays, the House has concurred in the Senate changes, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 92. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, there's a Senate concurrent resolution number 24 for the title change on that. So with that, I move, Mr. Speaker, and ask unanimous consent that the Senate concurrent resolution number 24 be taken up as a special order of business.
Without objection?
I think we have to vote.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt